come on in.
And now, back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
The kids love him.
And your host.
Welcome to paradise.
Bill Frank.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to The Bill Frank Show on KVTA News Talk 1520, bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business and politics. Each of my guests will share his or her perspective on one or the other of these subjects. My next guest is the former general counsel of Los Angeles Unified School District. He knows something about remaking America's schools for the 21st century. We'll debate his solutions contained in his latest book, Renewal. Harold Qualwasser is an expert on school management issues and education policy and politics. He is, as I said, the former general counsel for the LA Unified School District. He served on the staffs of three U.S. senators and as the chief of staff to the California State Senator. He was also the deputy general counsel slash legal counsel for the U.S. Department of Defense under President Clinton. Joining us on the phone, hi, Hal, how are you doing today?
I'm delighted to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest. And your book, Renewal, Remaking America's Schools for the 21st Century, had a lot in it to digest. Many of the ideas that you posit in the book that I like, the three big ones that I took away, the 20th century American public school education system was an exercise in mass production. In this case, the students were the actual product. Another thing that I liked was the students are not the problem in public education. It's the adults. And thirdly, more money is not the panacea to better education. So let's tackle each of these issues, if we can, Hal, separately, starting with the 20th century educational system. It was to make sure that Johnny could go to work on the assembly line and that Susie could sort of balance the checkbook at home. But now in a globally competitive world where U.S. students might compete for the best jobs with the Chinese, the Japanese, and the Indian students, we're fighting, you know, truancy and relevancy issues for our school. How do we impact the thinking about public education so that we can move to a new vision from the old one that we're sort of mired in?
You've hit the nail on the head here in terms of what I want your listeners to understand about school reform. When we engaged in this mass production system, it really wasn't very flexible. So there were lots of kids who either zoned out or were simply ignored by the way we taught, which was one teacher in one classroom using one textbook and teaching it one way. And, you know, we tolerated that for most of 100 years because kids could get along without a great education. When we came to understand that that was no longer going to work, the great question was, well, gee, what's plan B? And we have gradually figured it out. We have figured out how to deal with kids who learn differently, who have different interests, who have different levels of mastery on the day they head into class to learn the next lesson, who have different levels of social and emotional development. We really now can figure out how to deal with these kids in a variety of ways, many of which, frankly, are helped along by having really good computer systems available to provide an alternative to whole class instruction, that is to say the teacher standing up in front of the room and lecturing. But what you've got to understand is that that old mass production system wasn't just what happened in the classroom. Everything around it kind of fit that vision. The difficulty in moving to this new system isn't just getting teachers to understand how to teach differently. It's that the whole system behind them and everything that revolves around them has got to change to be supportive of the new vision. Now, let me give you I know I'm running on here, but let me give you one example because I want your listeners to understand how complicated this is.
Okay.
In the old days, when you had one teacher and one textbook, you know, that lesson plan might last 10 years. And it was deliberately created that way because the people who came up with this mass production system didn't think teachers were really capable of exercising much discretion. They didn't want them to have much discretion. You know, you've got the textbook, you've got one way we want you to teach it, and that's it. And in that context, evaluating the skill of teachers, probably not so important because you didn't assume they had a lot of skill in the first place. And you go to this new system where you're asking teachers to exercise immense amount of discretion literally every day, where the lesson plan is likely to last 10 minutes, certainly not 10 years. Suddenly, the quality of instruction is much more important. You're asking teachers to do something much tougher, much more difficult than they've ever been asked to do before. So suddenly, evaluation and the continuous training of teachers becomes infinitely more important than it used to be in the old days. And that change is replicated in probably 50 different things that circle around the classroom and the school in the school district.
All right. My guest is Harold Kwalwasser, and we're talking about his latest book, Renewal, How We Can Remake America's Schools for the 21st Century. And Hal, if the answer is known, yes, there are some things impeding the progress of how we can make the change. But if the answer is known, what stands in the way of us converting over to this new style of learning and revamping our American education system?
I would argue that the principal change is that parents and community leaders have got to take much more interest in what happens in the schools and in the school districts. They've got to participate in school governance in ways they haven't in decades. You know, average school board election in California, you get about a 15% voter turnout. That just isn't going to do it. One of the most fundamental images that just cycles around in my brain is every time we at the Los Angeles Unified School District, hit a school board meeting. I worked for a superintendent, Roy Romer, who was a great guy, knew a lot about education, but we did really very little to reform the system, much to our great regret. And one of the things that I remember so vividly is that every time we would start to come up with an issue regarding reform, the audience out there in the school board room would be just silent. Parents and community leaders weren't pushing us. They weren't supporting us. So that the forces of the status quo got to prevail. We had no community support. Here we were trying very hard to improve the schools, and nobody showed up to clap, to yell, to shout, even to say a good word on our behalf. So the whole point of writing Renewal, Remaking America's Schools for the 21st Century, is to argue that parents and community leaders have got to be the principal drivers of school reform and of maintaining high-quality schools where they exist. You can't outsource that obligation to Washington. You can't outsource it to Sacramento. You've got to do it yourself.
All right, here, here. I agree with that, Hal, but I'm gonna push you if I can for just a minute, because clearly you didn't have the community support in L.A., as you now lament, and that's true. But as we talked about at the outset, the adults are the ones that are getting in the way of the education, not the students. The question is, which adults? Because you've got all kinds of adult populations here. You've got the teachers. You have the principals, the superintendents. You have the teachers' union leaders. You have parents in the community that you adequately pointed out. And you've got our politicians, both at the local, state, and the federal level. So as I look at this, I'm just going to take the other side of the argument for a minute, because it appears very clear to me right now that there's a trend in America that whatever industry a union touches, that industry lags behind the rest of the world. And just take a look. The automobile industry, unions nearly put the big three out of business. More efficient manufacturing and the right-to-work states clearly overtook Detroit. In the airline industry, unions have forced every major airline in the United States into bankruptcy in this country at one point or another. Postal workers, the unions there, are contributing to the USPS's annual losses, which run in the tens of millions of dollars. It was just in the newspaper today that the USPS lost $3.2 billion from January to March of this year. And that's resulting in postal rate hikes and the elimination of Saturday services and so forth. So then there's the teachers' unions. The rank-and-file teachers are laid off when there are budget cuts, but administrators and superintendents are not laid off in the same proportion as the teachers are. So I'm going to posit that the unions are the ones that are standing in the way here. What would you say to that?
Let me give you as clear an answer as I can. If you're right, then schools in right-to-work states should be the best schools in the United States. In fact, they're not. The best schools in the United States are probably in Massachusetts and Maryland, and they're both heavily unionized states. The South, without unions, does not have great schools as a whole. So I tend to not draw an easy correlation. Let me, however, give you a couple of points that I think I would use to make your argument, but in a slightly different fashion. We are asking teachers to do something entirely new. Let's just think of them as people who used to make buggy whips, but we've now moved into the automobile age. And we go into the factory and we say, guys, you used to make buggy whips, you now got to make engine blocks. And they say, we don't know how to make engine blocks. We're good at making buggy whips. We like buggy whips. And, you know, they're going to resist the change because it's not what they're used to. And I invite your listeners to think about their own jobs, that if the boss shows up tomorrow and says, we all, you know, all of you guys who used to do this, oops, sorry, you're going to now do something completely different, there's going to be some resistance. You know, people have been doing this for 10 years. They like it. They feel comfortable doing it, and suddenly they're asked to do something entirely different. So at that level, you know, I think there is going to be some resistance from teachers. The good districts, and there are good districts, because what I did for the book was I went to 40 high-performing and transforming school districts around the country. And I observed both what they were doing and how they got there. And what these districts have managed to do, and many of them are unionized, not all, but many were unionized, what they have managed to do is get everybody in the district to embrace the vision. And in some ways, it's not that hard to sell. Teachers for years have been saying that the old mass production way didn't work well and that it made a mess of their classrooms. In these good districts, the board, management, has been able to make the sell that you, Mr. or Ms. Teacher, have been trying for years to achieve this different and individualized form of instruction. Now here's your chance. And at least in some places, the transformation's taken place. In lots of places, it hasn't, and you know that's why you see this sort of very spotty transformation around the country. My view is that what parents and community leaders need to do is, first of all, to push the board, push the superintendent to undertake this really tough task of transformation. And then what the parents and community folks have to do after that is stick with it. This doesn't happen in a day. It doesn't happen in a year. And to the extent the teachers fantasize that this too shall pass, parents and community leaders have to stand shoulder to shoulder with a committed reform board and a committed reform superintendent and say, no, this won't pass. This is the new world. You've got to learn to live with it. And if parents and community leaders understand where they're going and they understand their role in helping the schools get there, it can be done.
All right. My guest is Harold Qualwasser. He's author of the book, Renewal, Remaking America's School for the 21st Century. Hal, let me just shotgun some things at you, if I can, real quick,
sure,
that apply to education. I'm going to start with days in school. Right now, in China, Japan, and Korea, they're increasing the number of days in school for public education, while America's cutting back because of budget cuts. Japan goes 232 days, whereas here in the United States, we're only doing, on average, about 184 days. Is more days in school going to help this problem?
Yes, if they're quality days. One of the things that I want to make clear is I believe in a longer school day and a longer school year. I think both are fundamentally quite helpful. But I do think that that time and those days need to be used profitably, which means you really need to get that individualized kind of instruction and much more thoughtful curriculum in place. And once you do that, that extra time is well worth every penny people are going to spend to achieve it.
All right. Hal, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Renewal?
I want leaders to take away three things. First of all, I want people involved. And I cannot tell you how fundamental that is, because I've thought long and hard about the history of No Child Left Behind and trying to force change from Washington. And I've thought long and hard about trying to do it from Sacramento. And neither work very well. And whatever the deficiencies there have been in recent years in local school districts stepping up to the plate, it still seems to me to be the best way to do things. The second thing that I want leaders to take away from this is that there really is a model out there, and it can be used by any school, be it a public school or a charter school. It doesn't matter. They're models. They work. This is not a time for despair. It's a time for action. And the third thing I want people to take away from this is that they need to rethink the way we create our schools or organize our schools. I think in the long run, we are headed toward a system of schools rather than a school system. In other words, instead of having Ventura Unified School District or LA Unified School District, I think we're headed toward a vision where all schools are reasonably autonomous governing entities. In other words, traditional public schools will start to function a lot more like charters, and charters, on the other hand, are going to have to take on some of the obligations that have been traditionally assigned solely to the traditional public schools, or at least where the traditional public schools have carried most of the burden, like special ed kids or English language learners. And that's not a panacea of everything, you know, that will fix everything, because the only true fix is systemic. But that over time we are heading toward a system that looks like that, and that's probably a good thing and should be encouraged.
And we're going to have to leave it there. My guest has been Harold Quawasser, author of the book Renewal, Remaking America's School for the 21st Century. Hal, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
I have a website, renewingourschools.com. I encourage people to look at it. It's got lots of commentary on current education issues, and it's got at least one current poll that I'd like any principals who are listening to this to take. It asks them whether they feel they've been adequately trained to discharge their current obligations to evaluate teachers. My expectation is many of them are going to say they aren't, and it'll be a good antidote to remind legislators in Sacramento and local school boards that if you're going to step up things like improving evaluation, you've got to actually improve the evaluators as well.
Very good point. My guest has been Harold Quawasser, author of the book Renewal. Hal, we'll have to talk to you down the road. Thanks so much for being our special guest.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much.
And I'll be back with my next guest after these words from our sponsor.